Hi, Bobby Halton here for our friends at Unimac. There's no price you can put on a life, including our own. Being proactive with our health and safety is non-negotiable. To protect against cancer-causing carcinogens, you need more than just clean gear. You need a total solution with the best equipment, the best technology, and the best training. That's why Unimac partnered with an NFPA-authorized independent service provider to offer certified training on NFPA 1851 standards. When it comes to keeping us and our fellow firefighters safe and healthy, demand the total package. Get the details at unimac.com/protect.
All right, welcome to another Fire Engineering Podcast, Networking for Success. I am your host, Dave McGlynn. Thank you, Chief Halton, for the opening, for you guys to go check out Unimac. That's who's sponsoring the show again tonight. So tonight is March the 19th, 2021. And, you know, we thought that 2020 was going to be over and things were going to be great. And here we are still looking like we were around this time last year. So with that said, we're going to dive into the show. I want to tell everybody that has listened to the show before, thank you. You guys understand what the show is about. For those that are first-time listeners, thank you for listening. Typically, my show isn't your regular ordinary fire show or your regular fire engineering show. When I was offered the show a couple years ago, I had explained that I want to be able to try to do it in a way that I like to do it. So I've made a great career off of networking with other people. I've been very blessed to be around some great minds in the fire service and in the military and in emergency services with police, fire, and EMS. A lot of the successes that I've had and a lot of the ideas that I've had, I've either pushed off of other people to see what they thought, or people gave me suggestions on how to run with things, and together we were able to capitalize and make some great things. So the point of the show is exactly that. It's to network with others, to how to network for success. We talk to great people from all over our beautiful country. We talk to great leaders in the military, great leaders in the fire service, great leaders in emergency services, business owners, everything. Anybody that can try to bring something to the table that can help us. The other nice thing is I try to do my show live. So if you're listening, we are live. So you want to call in, the phone number is 760-454-8852. That's 760-454-8852. And if we're able to pull you in, we'll pull you in. You can ask my guest or myself any questions. Understand that those who know me, I do like to joke around, but this is a fire engineering format. So, you know, let's be a little prudent. The point is to be able to bring these great people so that you can ask them questions, because they're not somebody you'd be able to talk to every day. So tonight, I'm joined by a great friend of mine, a person who is a true mentor, and I'll say in the show about my feelings on that word, how it's used very loosely. This person truly is a mentor of mine, this person that's helped me greatly in the realm of how to be a good training officer, and has really been a big supporter of me for the things that I've been able to be involved with, and he's a person I go to regularly and ask advice for. So tonight I'm joined by Paul Wind. Paul Wind is the owner and senior safety consultant of Battalion 1 Consultants. He's a 33-year veteran of emergency services, where he has over 30 years of discipline in fire and emergency medical services. He holds a Blue Card Incident Commander Instructor Certification, as well as numerous nationally accredited certifications such as Fire Officer 3, Instructor 3, Inspector 2, Health and Safety Officer, Hazmat Technician, and Confined Space Technician. Paul recently retired as a battalion chief within the Federal Fire and Emergency Services. Paul was a course developer and instructor for the University of Texas in Arlington. He accomplished an improved firefighter safety course with a blended software analytics tool, a hazardous materials command course for company officers, and several other improvements to course and programs. In addition to his experience in emergency services, he has over 20 years as a certified OSHA outreach instructor specializing in general industry and disaster site worker. He also instructs permit required confined space, excavation, trenching, and soil mechanics, respiratory protection, emergency action planning, and many other safety courses. Paul maintains his certifications as a specialist in safety and health and both fire safety and disaster response. Paul's also is also designated as a safety training specialist, HAZWOPR training specialist, confined space entry and rescue specialist, and a trenching and excavation safety technician. So there's a lot of stuff there. I basically read his resume. And when he gave me his bio, he said, you don't have to read the whole bio. And I wanted to because I want people to understand that. First of all, in my experience with Chief Wind, or as I'll call him Breezy, because his nickname is Breezy, because his last name is truly Wind, W-I-N-D, you know, Paul has a whole gamut of a lot of different experiences and education, but the really nice thing that he's involved with is something that takes a huge discipline, patience, and skill set, and that's in the realm of the whole safety and rescue technician stuff. And you know, there's nobody better than him in when it comes to that. So, Paul, thank you for joining me tonight, brother. I really appreciate having you.
Hey, Dave, thank you very much for having me. I do appreciate that. I feel like you read my resume.
It's all good. So as I start every show, I ask everybody typically the same start-off question, and then I always end my shows with the same last question. And there's some relevance to it because I want my audience and the people that are going to be listening, whether it's on iTunes or iHeartRadio or just on fireengineering.com or the blogtalkradio.com sites, however you're listening to it. You know, I want people to know your background, how you got into this, so they know that you're a real person, you're a genuine person, that you came from some kind of humble beginning, et cetera. So tell me a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you're from, and what inspired you to join the fire service.
All right, Dave, thank you. Listen, I started off in Toms River, New Jersey, early on as a young kid. To stay out of trouble, I got involved with the Police Explorers. And that was my first real introduction into emergency services. It was a great step off for me as a young, you know, as a young kid, only at just turning 16 years old. It exposed me to a lot of different avenues, and then of course great opportunities that brought me into becoming a volunteer EMT with the Silverton First Aid Squad there in Toms River. And then, of course, over to the fire departments in both Silverton and then Toms River Company 1. I didn't spend that much time with those organizations as long as I really wish I could have. The opportunity came for me to join the U.S. Air Force, and that was my approach moving forward. I joined the Air Force, became a crash fire rescue specialist, at least that was the name at the time, and that was my strongest introduction into the disciplines of the fire service. That was the step off point for me. Part of that though was really led by my father. My father did not work in emergency services in the capacity of what many would think. He originally was running a Red Cross disaster operation up in Hudson County for Jersey City and Bayonne. And, you know, I'd always hear these stories and he would share pictures and a lot of different things, the way he supported the fire departments up there during the late 50s and early 60s. So that was, it was part of his support and some of his stories that did inspire me to really move forward with those endeavors. And then once I got into the Air Force, I had some great mentors. Never would have called them mentors at the time. It just really wasn't part of what we discussed today as mentorship, but they were the ones that embraced me and kind of took me underneath their wing and showed me that training and leadership were so important as we moved through the fire service. And again, that just continued onward. When I left the Air Force, there was an opportunity to apply for Fort Monmouth Fire Department up in Monmouth County, New Jersey, and I was lucky enough to receive a notification that said I had been awarded the position, and then that was it. From there, I just kept progressing and kept my focus around people that were truly not just professionals in their nature, but just real go-getters, people that really wanted to see things done in the fire service, you know, those that wanted to make changes, and again, just inspired me to keep going.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. And I know your background with, you know, where you came up from and everything. And I enjoy that you said up at Fort Monmouth. For me, it was, we used to say down at Fort Monmouth. Fort Monmouth was literally like in the middle between where you grew up and where I grew up. No, but that's really cool, man. That's some nice, interesting stuff. And I like, you know, attributing some desire, some inspiration and interest in getting into what we do from the stories that your dad would tell you, and he not even being part of the fire department, which just goes to show you how great of a thing it is that we are part of, you know, that here's your father had a completely different type of job, but he had such a great respect for the work that those men were doing that he, you know, his stories would be about stuff that they were doing when he came home that it ended up inspiring his son to get involved with that. That's really cool, man. I like that. That's actually the first time I've ever heard a story like that. So I like that story a lot. So tonight's episode, we're covering a lot of different things. We're going to be, you know, you and I, we're going to go back and forth on a lot, but for those that need to know, and as I said it in his introduction, you know, Breezy or Chief Wind, he had recently retired as the training chief out of Picatinny Arsenal Army base up in North Jersey. And a lot of things we're going to be covering are going to be focused mostly on training and leadership and the reason why the two of those things would go together. So, you know, in your opinion, are those two things important in the fire service? And if so, why?
Well, I mean, you know, of course they are, right? We all understand that. But we have to understand the importance, I think, behind each one of those, and that each one of them alone has to stand on their own merit. But yet at the same time, they have to complement or support one another. If you do not have strong leadership, it's fair to say that you won't have a committed training program. You won't have something that is, a worthwhile task, I would say, to go after. Because if it's not supported at the leadership level, there's a good chance that you're going to be struggling in the department. And again, training itself is complex. And you know that now as a training chief, and you've been doing this now for some time, we don't often get all the money and the resources that we need to conduct the training. We try to stay on top of training and all the trends and the changes, updates to standards, and given a purpose behind the training. Way too often we try to focus training around what we think is important, and we lose sight to the importance of what we really do. And I guess to simplify that, many of departments have fallen off the wayside because they're trying to stay in touch with trends, and they're chasing trends in the fire service, and they lose sight of the basics, the fundamentals, the things that really make the job, you know, our bread and butter mission of what we do. They lose focus of the simple things. And then, we struggle out there. And again, it doesn't mean that is the way every department is or every organization, but just at least from my perception and what I've seen and talking to other training officers from different parts of the country. And as you know, we have a global reach, right? Within the Federal Fire Service, we talk to our counterparts in all parts of the world, okay? And we get to see this and we hear those struggles. And it doesn't mean that some of those trends aren't important. It doesn't mean that they aren't, adaptive to our departments. But when we focus a lot of our attention in that direction, we'll lose sight. So how does that come back around to leadership and what you asked me as far as importance? If leadership doesn't understand that and leadership fails to accept that and give you clear direction and support what you're supposed to do, you're going to start failing, ultimately in the real operation and not in training.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Just in general, if you're not hosting that role of a training officer in that capacity, with that, you know, you'd still know that there's some kind of responsibility and ownership that comes with the from the leader on that. So the training officer, and I'm not saying it because I'm in the position, you know, because we both served in different positions in our careers, but you know, for those of you that are listening, you know, in the volunteer world, you know, so I used to joke and say that the fire company president in the volunteer house is the most thankless job, you know, and then when you get in a training officer position, whether you're volunteer or career, it's got to be the same thing. It's actually, there's a lot, probably a lot more challenges with the volunteer end of it, because you're trying to, you know, offer some kind of meeting the standard and stuff against, you know, their availability. In the career side, especially in the federal side, you know, we have certain qualifications and standards that we have to meet, and you have to try to implement that and find the time and the amenities and resources to provide that. But as well as you try to couple that all into what your mission needs are and train for that. And I like what you were saying, because, you know, we've both dealt with that with the shiny widget thing. You know, there's merit. Now, I'm not taking away from this. So anybody listening, you know, if you misinterpret what I'm saying, I'm going to clarify it for you. So, you know, don't Donald Trump me and only edit one piece of it. I'm going to tell you how what I'm really saying. So what I'm saying is there's merit to certain different things and certain disciplines and certain sexy terms and certain sexy little training things that are out there. And if you have the time and the resources to conduct the training or play with it or dabble into it, whatever, there's no problem with that. There's always room for cool stuff. What I have a beef with, what I've always had a beef with, is when you absolutely suck at the thing you're supposed to do, but you're amazing at the thing that you won't really have a mission for. You know, I don't care that you're great at doing something that we're going to do 1% of the time. I'm more interested in the fact that you can't do the thing we do 99% of the time. That's a problem for me. So, you know, when you run into people that, you know, you try to put together a program and you try to, you know, stick to some basics, you try to throw some basics out there on a monthly basis or whatever, it's not an insult to anybody's intelligence. It's a matter of keeping everyone fresh. And, you know, there could be 9 or 10 guys on duty, or, you know, 40 guys in your firehouse, whatever. And if – excuse me, I swallowed my chew there. That's never good. And if, you know, one or two of them are kind of falling back on pulling hose or advancing the hose line, whatever it is, we'll do a whole drill with everybody or do training around that with everybody, because the more the merrier. One, we're freshening the skills of the people that need it to be brushed off or freshened. And then two, you get different mindsets and different tidbits and ideas. You get everybody starting to be engaged. Now they start helping the guy that was kind of falling off a little bit or is a little green, whatever it is. So, you know, I like what you had to say there. It's that's the truth. It is. It's it's very important to stay mission focused. It's not to take away from the cool things, but don't just focus on the cool things.
Yeah, absolutely, Dave, and I agree. You know, I need to maybe clarify exactly what I was saying there, so it isn't taken out of any kind of context. I do believe that we have to look at those new techniques and new styles. They are important, and we need to do that research. Have a plan, though, right? Don't just try to throw it out into an implementation without doing due diligence on researching that. Engage with those other instructors and those companies. Talk to the other departments that have transitioned the same way maybe you are trying to transition into those programs. So I don't want it to come across that, you know, hey, don't look at anything new and stay doing the same old. Because, again, we'll end up in a position where we never progress. The point is, I guess, that we're trying to drive is we often fail to get back to our basics. And we lose sight of the things that we should be doing on a daily basis, as you had stated. And my approach now, especially since I've started my own business here doing this, it was trying to drive back to the basics, but get to really understand what you're doing. Spend a little bit more time learning those specific tasks. And it's like one of the things that we discuss about atmospheric metering. And I know I probably have a few people that will listen and may even want to jump in and say stuff, and that's perfectly fine. But that atmospheric meter is telling us a story. But we've spent so much time teaching people to live in a threshold. You know, worry about what the meter's telling us when it goes into an alarm, but we fail to listen and watch the meter that's telling us a story about our environment or our conditions. And those are the things that we want to get back to. And, you know, as I stated earlier, the Federal Fire Service is unique. And I agree with you 100% that there are some points within the volunteer service that could be a struggle. I was in my position almost on 5 years, and there were programs that I was still struggling to implement. And I do have concern about, you know, our volunteer brothers and sisters that may not have that longevity in time to implement a program or see a tech fire service follow all the way through. And before you know it, at the point that you're trying to get that implemented and really become part of your policies and procedures and what you really do out on the fire ground, once again, there's something new and you're changing direction to go a different way. So, you know, master your craft, right? You know, we've said this, you've said it, I've used the same title and phrase. Master it. You own it. This is your craft. Master it. But spend the time to get the education behind it. Don't just whimsically go out there and think that we're all knowing. And that goes back to what you originally asked me about the leadership role. Leadership needs to be involved in training too. And in two aspects, not just because they're a chief officer, a company officer, they need to be equally a student. And your crews and your firefighters and your the rest of your department needs to see that. They need to understand that. I'll give a lot of respect to chief officers that I see sitting down in the class next to one of their firefighters. Yeah, your world's different. You have different elements that you need to learn and focus on. I don't expect the chief maybe pulling a handline through a fire, but I sure as heck want that person next to me to learn that new style. How do you lead a department if you don't know what the new technique is? And I'm okay with the fact that there's a white shirt and a gold badge that can't pull the hose through there. I'm okay with that. But give me the opportunity to sit there and share the information, learn the information with me. We have our firefighters that will go out there and do the work. We have company officers that are going to step up and lead their companies. And the chief officer just needs to be able to support that. But how do they lead it if they don't understand what's occurring? So they can't be dismissed from training and being out there. There's roles. There's roles and there's responsibilities for them that are in that position. So, yeah, I just wanted to clarify that because I didn't want to come off maybe abrasive in nature and the fact of thinking that, you know, we can't progress. We need to progress.
No, you didn't come off abrasive at all. You were very clear. I cleared it up because I have so many people that will try to misinterpret what I say, so I figured I'd just make it clear. Like, listen, I'm not saying don't go out and do cool shit, but make sure you know how to do your regular job too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's and again, I mean, it's exciting when you see new techniques come out there. And again, like I said, you have a chief officer there with you that wants to learn, that's eager to learn. You know, it's really impressive. Again, some of my best leaders were not just students, but they were also the instructors. They didn't dismiss the training. They didn't step aside from training. They were there in one capacity, and that was exciting for me because that was my first exposure to that, believe it or not, was when I was stationed at McGuire Air Force Base in New Jersey. And the fire chief at the time was instrumental in teaching classes. I had never seen that before, never heard of that before. I expected them to be in an office and only come out when they really needed to come out there. And here you had, you know, a chief of a department that was stepping up to lead their department and give direction. And again, that became an inspiration for me to sit there and say, okay, that's pretty cool. And that set the bar for me right from the get-go. And when I didn't see that in other chief officers as I progressed through my career, you begin to wonder. You begin to think about their position within the department. And that's not the same for every department, and I understand this. This audience that you have is extremely diverse from all different size departments, from career through paid through even, you know, industrial and rural departments. in all different aspects, and I understand that. But, you know, sometimes you got to think about that. And if you're going to take on the role in that position as a company officer, as a, an assistant chief or battalion chief, and, of course, you know, up to, you know, deputy and fire chief, get in that position. Let your folks know that you're there. Don't just take the office position or the office role. Get out there.
Yeah, I always said that, you know, there's those chiefs that lead through email. You know, I like to, whether it's been, you know, because I've had criticism over it, and I'll chalk it up to, you know, I'm young or whatever, but, you know, I've had criticism that, you know, I would spend too much time with the guys. I don't know if there's such a thing. If there is, you know, maybe I'll grow into figuring that out, but that's where you find out what's going on, you know, is on the floor, you know, and them knowing that you're there and, you know, not leading through email, but actually filtering through the things that you hear and the suggestions. And, you know, COVID's been a real pain in the ass this past year. And I know that, you know, the last year you were doing it, you know, you were dealing with it too. It's been a pain in the ass as far as the, I guess, the activity or the progressiveness behind at least my training program, speaking for myself. But, you know, that is the truth. You know, when you're, one, when you're a training officer, you are a leader, okay, because, you know, you're the one responsible for the development of their skill set, you know, and the repetition for them to be able to keep their skill set. But then, you know, the other hand of it, like you said, you know, you need that top cover support, and you need that, you know, and you need that bottom cover support too, is, you know, the company officers need to be able to be supportive of what's going on, and they need to be able to drive it forward. The chief officers and, you know, on up to the chief need to support it, because, you know, when you don't have that, when you have that kind of break in that system, it drastically affects the productivity and the efficiency of the program itself. And, you know, that's where the leadership thing comes in very important. You know, you need that support. You need those people to be able to, like I said, you know, offer the support, but also the discipline that goes along with it. You know, there's times where you'll have somebody that sooner drive a recliner than go out and do driver's training. You know, that's where you need that support with your company officers and whoever else to say, hey, you know, like, it is what it is. We're going out and we're doing this, you know, and those are just important things, like in my own experience, and obviously as you've dealt with it, you know, just things that I feel that both go synonymous together. They both, training officer is a leader, but also works with leaders. He or she needs that, those leaders to support what they're trying to do in order to execute the program, you know? So we covered both of the parts of the roles and the responsibility of it and you know, why the two are important. So what I'd ask you is, what are some qualities or characteristics that a good leader and a good training officer should have?
It's funny, and I've shared a personal story with you, I know, in the past here, the recent past. Don't focus on the title. Focus on that job. So what does that mean? That's the question behind it. You don't need a title to be a good leader. A good company officer is leading. And if they are inspirational, if they're educated and motivated, where their crews will follow them, and they're involved in their activities, anything from cleaning a firehouse to going out and taking care of a daily activity around your community, to seamlessly working together on the fire ground, basically with the ability to answer the questions from the firefighter to the captain's role or to a lieutenant's role. They can, you know, answer that questions. Leadership doesn't necessarily need a title, necessarily. And when I think about that, the more and more I'm making it very very detailed and very complex, meaning that even though I was the training officer, Dave, you know this too, we're not going to know everything. And we have to be able to lead folks and bring folks in that within your own hide, within your own department, that are inspirational to the rest of the department based on their knowledge and their experience. Some of our firefighters on the floor had far greater knowledge, far greater experience than their own company officer, than even chief officers. And giving them the opportunity, you know, identifying their capabilities and their knowledge base, and then giving them the opportunity to come and deliver that information back to the department, make changes, to me, shows leadership. And leadership shouldn't necessarily always be focused around a title. So that's just one aspect of it. But, you know, as we look at this as far as, you know, qualities of a good leader, for the same reason, they're extremely passionate about their job. They're dedicated to learning and improving not just themselves but the department. If they only focus on themselves and they're only going out to take classes and learn things for themselves and just themselves and don't want to share that information back to the department to improve not just the quality of the department but the capabilities and services to the community, they're not a leader. They may become very well educated, but they're not a leader. So, you know, I often would look for those things. There were many of firefighters that I put, that I would ask to be in those positions. I didn't put people in positions. I asked them to be involved. And some of them were extremely eager, excited to jump up and take that opportunity. And the ones that could lead would take those programs, develop them, and they would become very instrumental to the department and the success of the department. So a training officer needs to understand their limitations. Again, that we're not going to know it all. It's just impossible. As an example here, I just took classes this week to the U.S. Army. And I had everything from engineers to industrial hygienists to safety professionals, people that were way, way outside of my realm. And these were the leaders of their organizations. And they were there to gain that information, to bring that back and improve the quality of their programs and their people. That to me is part of leadership, that they're doing it not to benefit themselves, but to improve their organization, their departments, their communities. And that's pretty good. And, you know, to see those folks, like I said, they knew their limitations. They gained that information. And they're eager to get more, eager to learn more. I mean, it's not a really easy answer just to throw out there. I think, you know, we can give some adjectives or adverbs to what we would think would be a good leader without getting our own opinions involved, our own personal, issues involved. So sometimes we don't necessarily agree with the person that may be above us in a rank structure. And equally, we may not see eye to eye with the people below us in the rank structure. But that should not take away the fact that they can't be a good leader or inspirational leader for the department. Many of the best training groups that are out there currently traveling all around this world, delivering great information, improving the way we do firefighter tactics and techniques and styles, will never, ever see the right seat of their engine or their truck. They'll never see it. They're some of the best leaders in their department. They motivate, inspire the people that they work with to get out there and do the work and grow and learn in their departments. So I told you, you got to keep title out of it. I think that's often some of our biggest problems is we focus on title. We focus on title and we lose focus of the job. And that sets us up for disaster. I don't need a chief officer out of the scene you know, holding their portable radio, tapping their neck, who doesn't know anything about the fireground. And some of the folks that may have listened to this know what I'm talking about. Super important. Some leadership, and you know this again, Dave, you've been around the fire service for some time, you know, walking around with a baseball bat type leadership, right? We're going to dangle the carrot in front of you and try and lead you to that carrot. And then when you get there, we're going to take the club out and club you. And that's not good leadership, but there's way too much of that out there. There's way too much of it out there.
Yeah, you're right.
No, I couldn't agree with you more, man. You know, it's funny. I'm just sitting here. I'm running a bunch of things through my head as you're talking. Yeah, it's just a lot of great stuff there, and you're spot on with everything you're saying. You know, for the audience, you know, I want to just let everybody know regardless of whatever your position is, but specifically if you are in, I always say, a position of influence, which is technically a leadership role. You know, especially in the world of training, it is an all-inclusive thing. You know, yeah, there's, you know, different officers have different new responsibilities, so they don't have to be doing everything the firemen are doing, but they should still try to take some kind of active interest, because it just shows that you care and you're staying fresh and everything like that. But at the same token, you know, I go through this all the time, you know, and you know this, you'll get a chuckle out of it because you and I have had this conversation multiple times. You know, with the being a training officer, there's this misconception that you're supposed to teach everything. I'll teach everything if you want me to teach it. I like talking. Everybody that knows me, you know, knows I'll talk, you know, and I like teaching. I go all around teaching. It's one of my favorite things to do. I enjoy it very much, but, you know, then you're going to run into that level of death by PowerPoint. And if that's what you want, you know, I'll do it. But I'll tell you, it's I'm against it because I'm in the position to have to give you the best product I can give you. And I'll tell you flat out, if Dave McGlynn's teaching you certain things, I'm not giving you the best product that's out there. You know, what I'm good at is facilitating to put that product together. I can't tell you certain things about knots or EMS or hazmat because they're just not my forte. So, you know, I'll death by PowerPoint it all day long, but that doesn't mean you're going to learn anything. And that's why you try to build that team, you know, that group of your, you know, cadre of subject matter experts and good instructors that, you know, are passionate about it and inspirational and understand the material. You know, one of the things that I run into is, you know, you find people that are true subject matter experts, but, you know, whether they feel that they've been beaten or they truly have, you know, but they've been beaten down and their motivation's kind of taken away from them. And you can't get what you really need out of them. You know, that's where you got to try to readjust your gears and figure out how you can tap into that, because not only is it a disservice to your organization, because here's this person that has a certain level of expertise, but it's also a disservice to the person that they're not willing to share that information. You know, one of the things I'm a firm believer in is a return on my investment. You know, I'll send anybody to training as long as I can. You know, sometimes I get told, you know, through certain bureaucracy or certain agendas, whatever it may be, you know, I always have to answer to a higher power, and I might be told I can't send somebody. And as much as that'll piss me off from time to time personally, it just is what it is. You know, they're in the position to make that decision. But if I can send you, then I have this added strings attached that I want to return on my investment. You know, I want you to bring back to us what we sent you for, because what good is it if it's just sitting in your brain? You know, it's useless to me and useless to the whole department that you got all this information just sitting in your head. And also, what good is it for you? You know, yeah, on paper it might look good, and maybe you'll be able to get some kind of career out of it. But if you're not willing to share the information, then it's kind of useless. So, you know, there's a lot of things in play when it comes to that, you know, is the, you know, trying to eliminate the beaten dog syndrome, trying to tap into the people that are the true subject matter experts, trying to convince people to be inspirational and passionate. And it becomes a toll. It becomes very taxing. You know, and the other thing with the leadership or with the training officer position, and you know this, Breezy, you know, you're in the position that, first of all, every position should be an inspirational kind of mentoring leadership position, right? But I found that the training officer really is the one person who can control the attitudes. I don't want to say control because everybody's in control of their own attitudes, but try to create an environment for the attitudes, you know? So like me, like, you know, I have a new strategy in where I'm working now because, you know, there's a lot of the beaten dog thing and a lot of people that have personal agendas or through their own ego or have some validation in their gripe, whatever it is, you know, but there's some toxicity, there's some turmoil. And we can capitalize on the way they feel right now by getting them out of the station and getting them training. And, you know, trouble finds idle minds. So let's get moving and let's do some stuff and have some fun while we're doing it. And that becomes very taxing on the person trying to do that. And a lot of people don't realize that because you're putting a lot of yourself, you know, a lot of your personal being into trying to make sure that there's some kind of morale. Because with no morale, then your training program is absolutely going to suffer because everybody's already kind of checked out. So they're not going to want to do any of the training. And that goes back into what we were saying with the importance of the leaders is, you know, whether you're a person who wears rank or not, but especially if you're the decision maker or the policy maker, you know, if you're in your union and you're a union officer, you know, or you're just the senior guy or whatever, you know, you're in some kind of position of influence and that influence can be good or bad, you know, and it's kind of up to the training officer at the end of the day to figure out how they can marry all those attitudes and those personalities and make the best of it. And it's a really taxing thing, at least personally, I feel, you know, and I know that you've gone through it too, you know.
I agree, Dave. I was just going to say, I mean, you really hit a spot there. I mean, I really agree. 100% with what you're saying. I mean, a lot of times, you know, at least for a young training officer, a new training officer, I know when I first got in there, I was full of piss and vinegar, right? I was gonna change direction and make the best programs and do all that. And I quickly found my limit. I quickly hit my limit and I realized, okay, not necessarily the direction that I thought was gonna be the best. Right? Wasn't going to be the best way to go. And I had to quickly change gears. I had to, change direction a little bit and reapproach the way I was going to take the training program. And then I realized that I kept saying just that, I going with this, how am I going to do it? And it's not I. It's not, you know, I mean, I wanted to get into the whole, there's no I in team stuff, right? But I realized that it's a bigger system than just that. And, you know, I had to step back and realize that there were other opportunities, exactly what you do with the networking. And that was the direction that I took this. I realized there are so many other opportunities outside of my organization to help improve my organization. It wasn't about me. I didn't look for bells, whistles, awards, certificates. I didn't really want any of that stuff. What I wanted to see was that the department became successful, that opportunities that I was able to foster were able to continue even after I left. That's where I wanted to see that go, that we were starting to develop fighters to become better company officers and company officers to be better mid-level leadership positions into battalions and assistant chiefs and so on. Now, did I get there? No. Did I establish a foundation or the infrastructure for that to occur? I think I was capable of doing that. But again, I did not do that on my own. That was a lot of people involved, people that I had to go and network with, I hate to say, you know, make promises for things to happen. But that's what we were doing. You know, if we're able to help get this done, we can possibly have these training programs. Okay. And that's where it started to grow. As you read off in my bio about being a blue card instructor, that was the last thing on my mind to do. But my leadership, my fire chief, didn't give me a choice, told me I'm going, and that's the end of it. And I'm thankful that I went through the program and I disciplined myself and understood that program and was able to build out a great training opportunity for many of people, not just in the federal side, but on the civilian career side as well as the volunteer side. So it's you start to realize that the leadership role, the training officer's role as far as that goes, as I said, you have limitations, personal limitations, and you have to be able to identify them, as well as your integrity. Your integrity means everything. If you try to say that you know something or you try to teach something that's out of your realm, you're quickly going to be called out. Don't do that. And, you know, you identified a very critical point to that. And that's sitting there saying, hey, listen, sure, I could teach it. It's not going to be quality. It may not even hit the mark, but I'll get through it. And that's the importance of what I was saying before. We have to tap into those resources within the department. You have some amazing hazmat technicians. You have amazing technical rescue folks. And we have to foster a culture that they don't end up in that beaten dog position and that we are able to recognize them. Just because we recognize people for their great experience and knowledge doesn't necessarily make them a position of leadership in a role, in a title. You don't need to be a great instructor in hazmat or technical rescue. That shouldn't automatically award you into a lieutenant or captain's position or above. But what it should do is it should give you that good feeling that you are doing great things. Because if I took you out of, and you have the same folks, I'm confident of it, Dave, like many of these other training officers or other officers that may be listening, they're going to be able to take their folks out of their department and put them in another department, and they're going to look like, an Avenger walking in there, right? A superhero walking in. To deliver the information because they're that good. They're that good at what they do. They may not have the tactics and the techniques for officer positions, but they are great at their tactical level. They are amazing at doing the task. They're just not maybe in those other positions. And they shouldn't be discredited for that. And that's part of the breakdown. I think part of the breakdown is some of those individuals may think that they should be in those positions of leadership or vice versa. If I do this, I should be awarded that position. I hope that at least in certain elements as training officers, realize that you have a position to understand and foster training, not be the one that is always out there training. You should never be the one that is always in front of the class. Go out there and tap into those resources of the great talent you have within your department. Chief officers need to also be able to do that. They need to be able to identify those things and really step forward to help deliver that message. You know, our training budget may not be fantastic, but when you have amazing, talented folks within your own hide, tap into them. Work out, network, partnerships with agencies on the outside. As you always said, Dave, bring those folks in. Some of those programs don't cost a nickel. They don't cost a single cent. Unions, you have some of the best training programs across the land. Tap into them. Tap into your neighboring departments. I can tell you up at Picatinny, I had some amazing talent outside of the gates of Picatinny. And I just couldn't never necessarily get all that great talent into my fence line in order to tap into their knowledge and their skills. There's a regret. I regret not being able to do that. But although my days are gone, it doesn't mean that effort should stop.
I'm with you. I always say that. You know that. I just, that's one of the things with where I'm at now. You know, I want to get us to where we need to be, where we're comfortable. Like I said, this COVID thing and then all the other certain things that go on has made it a challenge, but I do want to try to bring, cause there's some great talent outside the gate, and getting those guys to come in and pass that message and doing some kind of joint training or whatever. You know, that is a goal of mine. That's somewhere I want to end up, because it would be good to you work with these people. You got to know each other. You got to have that dialogue, you know, all that stuff. But also, just going back to the things you were saying, you know, just you're 100% right. You know, it's just, even for speaking for myself, you know, I'll get in the weeds on it, because I'll just get so personally involved with trying my hardest to mend a fence or to be the glue and trying to bring it to where I want it. And it's nothing against where I'm at now, because I love where I'm at now, and I know that the talent's there and we're going to get there. For me, it was just, you know, I had already gone through, and you know, because I used to vent to you, Christ, you know, every week, but you know, I basically metaphorically was rounding third up at West Point with where I was going with the program, and you're back up at bat. And I just feel like, you know, it's a challenge in itself to kind of readjust, but it's also, it's a good challenge, you know, for us to really make our mark in what we're going to do there. But that's the thing, is it's an all-inclusive, it's a joint effort. You know, you can't have these hidden agendas or these expectations or this ego going into it that, you know, well, if I do this, then what do I get or whatever. You know, it's for the betterment of the group. And if you really love the job and you're passionate about it, then, you know, you need to do it that way. And you're 100% right. You know, even just where I work now, you know, like, there's a group of guys I can think of right off the top of my head that I could just dump somewhere else, and they would flourish. They would do great, because there's a lot of talent there and a lot of expertise. Real quick, I have to do this because I think he thinks that I'm not going to do it. So I got to give a shout out to Kelby, old Scoots Farner, one of my new guys where I'm working at now. He's a great kid, very mature for as young as he is, and he's listening to the show, and he's texting me some funny stuff. He says, I expect a shout out now. So there you go, Kelbs, you got your shout out. And then Rosie and Buzz and Shoop and everybody else that's listening, thanks, guys. I got a lot of guys that are working tonight that are texting me and they're listening, and I appreciate that support. I know that they'll be doing snippets of it and playing it over the loudspeaker when I get back to work on Monday. But the thing is that's what it's all about. You know, it's that's why I love that, you know, you're on the show. Like, I didn't even brief you on any of the stuff that we're covering. You know, you've always been like that big brother, so we've always been basically very like-minded. And just some of the stuff that you're saying is some of the challenges that we're going through right now and where I'm at. And I just, you know, I love that you're saying it, because I know that they're listening too, and it's great stuff, and I really appreciate it. Before we continue on that, because, you know, obviously we'll go for a long time on it, I want you to talk about Battalion One Consultants. And I want you to talk about morning coffee, because I like what you're doing. I like that, you know, you didn't just hang up the hat and walk away from the fire service or from being an instructor. You're still developing people. You know, you're still developing programs. You're still bringing the fire service and emergency services and safety, you know, into the future. So I want you to talk about that. You know, tell me a little bit about, in my audience, about what you're doing and the programs that you offer, and tell them about how they can get, you know, check out morning coffee on Mondays, and just, you know, why you're doing it.
Yeah. Thanks again. You know, it's, but believe it or not, I mean, I absolutely I hate trying to talk about myself. I really do. Right. You may not think that from this podcast here and what we're doing. But I do. Battalion One Consultants, yeah, we have a group of great professionals, a blend of both safety and fire experienced individuals. I mean, folks that have really disciplined themselves over their lifetime into the world of and safety. And what I mean by the safety side is they're disciplined over into the occupational safety and health programs and courses. And the reason that becomes so important is a lot of times the things we do, especially in the technical world of confined space and excavation, even all of our respiratory standards that we follow, that is bridged between OSHA and the NFPA. So part of our endeavor here with our programs are to blend some of that together. The biggest blend to this, when it really occurred, was back into the days when we started pushing the NFPA 1500. And there was a lot of folks involved in this. And once we realized it was a lot of work to be in, you know, involved in this program to get this off the ground, and this was prior to Battalion 1 consultants coming to life here, we lost a lot of people. People started backing off because of the complexity of the program. This program has it was born, it died, it was born again, it died again, and it's starting to come back to life. And there's a lot of programs out there that touch different aspects of the NFPA 1500. And so really what we started to do is, you know, stop trying to go after the whole program, break it down. Let's break it down with a focus. Let's break it down with a focus into those critical areas. So for the fire and emergency services and the rescue services that are out there that are conducting confined space and trench rescue and those things, we spend a little bit more time trying to get those folks that are in the excavation and construction arena and the folks that are in industry to come together in both a industrial construction and a fire service setting, so that we go over those programs and deliver the backbone behind OSHA as well as the NFPA. So one of the things, like I said, is delivering that service, is kind of getting the education behind this. And, you know, you pointed out something earlier, which was really important, and most of us know this, that a lot of our training kind of took the sidelines during COVID. And that's where we really should have been focusing on education more. We could have been delivering education left and right and even more than we thought during COVID. We didn't know, right? We didn't know what the next month was going to bring and what we were going to do. But like you said, here we are. We're at this point, and we're starting to get out there and make changes. And Battalion 1 Consultants wants to be there. We want to be part of that and help folks out with the education, stuff that we can deliver online or in. So one of the services, like I said, is just kind of blending or bridging together both the OSHA and NFPA in some of those areas. I'm going to be honest. We're not out there. We're not going to teach a technical rescue. There are some amazing companies out there do it. Not in competition with anybody in that realm. But we are gonna deliver the education behind that, so people understand where this information came from. Again, we in the fire and emergency services and rescue, we focus on the tactical and the task level stuff, but we don't understand the information that comes into the development of those programs. Some of the courses that are out there, they spend time and they quickly go over what the OSHA regulations and what the laws are. Just to move on quickly into the tactical element. So so we give a better knowledge behind the history of it and the laws and regulations. And again, it is very important. One of the things that we are working on with that is to start getting CEUs for those programs. So there's a little bit additional value behind the programs that we're delivering. And we have a lot of different programs out there. We're currently in the development process, so a lot of my instructors have been given the opportunity to develop these programs, and we run them through a series of different channels in order to validate the program and the quality of the program before we just start going out there offering courses and throwing things up on a website. So that's one aspect. Some of the other courses are already Department of Labor certified. So some of our instructors are certified to deliver OSHA Department of Labor certificates along with a Department of Labor card that identifies that they have completed those courses. May not be specifically needed here in the fire service, but our folks over in industry and construction and in safety, they need those cards. They need that training. So we give them the real world aspect. If you would think of it, where do we typically fall in with OSHA on an incident? And it's usually because something's happened. And so we give them a real-world experience behind the standard. And if you don't follow the standard, then that's when you see us typically out there. So, again, providing real-world services to them is extremely important and valuable to them. In addition to that, Dave, one of the other things that we've been working on is the consultation and the evaluation services. Our evaluation services are third-party. Our folks are going to go out there based on our experience, and we can perform that third-party evaluation. You know as well as I do, and probably many of the people that are listening, they've been in situations where they conduct evaluation-based exercises and drills, and they use people from their own hide to conduct that evaluation. Is it a fair assessment? Is it a real assessment of your department? Or if you have a third-party assessment, such as us, as you know, for us to come in and do that evaluation, we're going to cite regulation standards. We're going to back that up with a written report and what we would recommend as guidance to either improve, maintain, or seek out additional training, none of which we're going to turn around and supply to you, right? So it keeps our interest very clean and very fair, meaning if I do an evaluation and said that your agency or organization needed training in a particular area, I'm not in there. I'm not coming back to deliver that training. So it's not, you know, it's not us trying to sell our service. And we know that there are some agencies out there that do that. We don't, right? We're going to come in, do our evaluation, and then after our evaluation, give you a debrief, and then we're on our way. So I think that's a very fair service. I think it's a very honest service that we would be providing for our clients. Consultations are becoming even more evident for agencies that are going for their CPSC accreditations, ISO ratings, folks that are looking for a third-party review of some of their information and how they're capturing their reports. Are they in line with what CPSC is looking for? We're gonna do that. We're gonna get involved in those type of agencies and organizations, help go through their records, identify some key areas, reporting elements, and kind of guide them along that path. We don't promise anybody CPSC or an ISO rating. That would be to me would be extremely unfair to them to come out and say that. But we will spend the time. And some of my folks already know that when I said we spend the time, we get in there and really go through the weeds of these departments and just try to help them get there. And it's important. So it's not, like I said, it's not about bells and whistles, right? It's not about bells and whistles that we deliver, but honestly, the stuff that we are delivering is extremely, extremely important for progression of departments. It's being a department that's in the know and where you're taking it. So chief officers that are in here that may be listening or watch this, you know, you're the folks that should be reaching back out to us. We want to work with you to help improve your agencies. For the firefighters, for company officers, we are going out there to start developing programs to help improve some of your operations. And just like I spoke earlier about atmospheric meters, that's one of our big our big programs going to be rolling out there, along with the OSHA programs like HAZWOPER and, you know, of course, our bloodbornes and CPRs and AEDs. We put a positive twist to them. So it's not about checking a box. And you know me, Dave, that's one of the things I absolutely hate. I hate the checklist systems. Checklist systems do have a purpose and a reason in what we do throughout different industries. But when it comes down to fire-based training and evaluations and stuff, we can't just go through a check mark, you know, all right, let's just do this training, check it off, we did it, we're great. We're going to give you a real-world approach to it, a hands-on approach. And every course that we deliver, cognitive and some kind of psychomotor skill to it, although many may be based on tabletop exercise or simulation, we're going to apply that to it. So, you know, I've invested quite a bit of money back into the business. I started buying meters, atmospheric meters and equipment, so that folks get hands-on. And it's not about just standing in front of a room and lecturing. This is your course, your program. We're going to put you there. And
it's a quality versus quantity thing.
Absolutely, absolutely, because, again, we see it from time to time and over, you know, just tell me that you did it. Just show me the check mark, right? We don't want your departments working like that. We've all at some point came from a department or organization that did that, and it's unhealthy, it's unsafe. And at the end of the day, are you really developing developing people to move on and carry on the torch for your department. And I'll wrap up because I know it's kind of long-winded with that. No pun intended. But
imagine that a guy named Paul Breezy wins.
the other part to that was the fact that you mentioned about the morning coffee. I am not, as you can tell, right? This is not my realm. I'm not a podcast person. I do the best I can. But I started doing morning coffees on Instagram off the Battalion 1 consultants on Instagram. So anybody that's on here and they want to jump on a Monday morning and follow us or even listen, jump on there Monday morning. I will share my screen, pretty much with anybody as long as we're keeping the information clean and fair. And it's just an open discussion. I let folks, I run it for a little bit over an hour and just let it run live. And we just kind of let the topic drive the conversation. Grab a cup of coffee and we hop on there on a Monday morning, usually 9 a.m. on the Eastern time. We just hop on there and just throw out some topics and discussions. Don't make it personal. It's very easy to do. I don't want you to hide behind, your Instagram accounts or a fake account. Just be real, be honest. You'll hear me typically end the conversation that way. Keep it real, keep it honest, keep it safe, and things are good. And that's all we ask for. I don't pitch the company. I don't do anything. It's just the time for us to get on there and just be us and just talk, and it's good. And it's fun.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, everybody that's listening, definitely check Paul out. He's on there as Battalion 1 Consultants on both Facebook and Instagram. And check out the Monday Morning Coffee at 9 a.m. Eastern time. You'll be able to see the live feed and check it out. So before we wrap up, Paul, I got to ask you the last question I ask all my guests. So what type of legacy do you want to leave behind?
That's a pretty powerful question, honestly, Dave. I at least feel that I'm pretty humble, so to kind of think about my own legacy, I really wouldn't have a straight answer, just to be honest with you. And the one thing that I would like to see is that the fire service itself adapts and continues to adapt and that it doesn't stay in a stagnant position. I've been the person that has stood up and accepted the challenge and been confronted when I hear people say, the group of millennials coming in and I hear them being bashed. Step back for a moment and think about how it was when you came in. And when you think about that, we were the same way. We learned a different way. We trained a different way. Things that we need to step back and look at the new group of firefighters coming in to this world. And so when I think about legacy, I want to think about legacy that is able to believe in tradition, share traditions, but adapt to the new ones, create new traditions, create a fire service that the world is changing. The world is changing around us, and it's changing fast. But don't seclude. Find ways that we can work, in learning different ways that we can teach and share information. The leadership style is going to change. It's changing right now. It's changing in many departments. So we need to learn that, right? We need to be able to embrace some of those changes. At the end of the day, we still have to go put water on fire. Still have to do it. It's just, how do we get that message across? And it is different. It's just different and sometimes difficult. But if I was to think about a legacy that I would personally want to see is that I understand change. And we just have to find ways that we can work with that. We can't lead with the baseball bat. We have to be able to understand it. It doesn't mean that we can't be firm or strict or disciplined or regimented. But we need to understand where we're going with it. So, just like I said, just try to remain strong. Stay humble. Appreciate the folks you work with. And you know, just continue doing the right thing, head in the right directions.
I love it. It's funny, I ask every one of my guests that same question. They always start off answering it the same way you just did, which is, you know, oh, that's a tough one. You know, but they all always end up having an awesome answer. I haven't had one person have a bad answer yet. You know, some better than others, but they always end up being awesome answers. And that's why I kept that part in the show, is because it does kind of throw you off. But, you know, like I always say, you know, the legacy thing is kind of your personal objective. It's not an ego thing. It's not a narcissism thing. It's, you know, what's the purpose? What's the drive? What do you want to leave behind? What's the end goal? You know, so when you walk away, you know, what was the objective? You know, that's the legacy. And I always enjoy hearing the answers from everybody, especially yours, man. It was a beautiful one. Before we end it, you know, I always do this too. I give the floor to you. You got any final words, anything else you want to say? It's all yours, brother. I appreciate you coming on and doing the show tonight.
No, just like I said, you know, thank you very much. I do appreciate this opportunity. You know, I didn't want to come in here to think that I was plugging, you know, my business adventures and those type of things. And you know, because we had spoken earlier a little bit, and I mean, between me wrapping up a class that I was just teaching and then rolling right into this is again, it's I'm very appreciative of that. And really, to finish out something with this, and I wanted to say this in between everything. A lot of great information came out tonight that we were sharing. It was part of that mentorship. And, you know, we're talking about leaders and we're talking about training and we're talking about a lot of different things like that. And I know I've said this even on my morning coffee stuff. Just look outside of your organizations. Look outside of your organizations for your mentors. It doesn't mean that you don't have great mentors within your own department, but when you look for your mentors outside of your organization, you will find inspiration. You will get good, clear direction. You will get somebody that will be willing to listen to your ideas, possibly give you a little bit of guidance. But the key to that, the key to any good mentor, is one that listens. So,
no truer words have been spoken either, because I am living proof that that is your philosophy. And I want to tell you, thank you, because you didn't have to do the things you did for me, spending that time with me to help me get acclimated and point me in the right direction so that I wouldn't fall on my face. I was at a different department and you had nothing that you owed me, and you did it. So I know that that's the truth when you say that, because you did that for me. That's how we started our relationship. So thank you.
No, it's, and like I said, I mean, sometimes we don't even realize it. We don't realize that we're becoming a mentor. Again, it there's no title. You don't get an extra badge or an extra cent in your paycheck. You're human. Just, you know, reach out there. There's a lot of great mentors. And you don't have to reach, if you're a volunteer, don't hesitate to reach to a career department. It has no status bearing. Some of my great mentors, at least in my mind, the mentors that I would go to, some were firefighters, that they were just incredibly knowledgeable and educated in their areas that, you know, they could give me words of wisdom that didn't even realize that they were giving me advice that way. I've had fire chiefs that I looked at as mentors in my department and outside of my department. I'm not going to go through a whole name drop, but there's a lot of great mentors out there. And social media is a good avenue for you to follow some of those folks, listen to them, and then, kind of reach out to them. They're human. They may not answer you right away because that's just who they are. So don't hesitate to reach out. And you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised that they're going to, step up and give you a little bit of advice. If they're in your community, neighboring jurisdiction, they'll probably want to grab a cup of coffee. That's kind of that hint, hint, wink, wink, catch us on the Monday morning for a cup of coffee. A lot of good people jump on and they'll share some information.
Yeah.
Friend them, network, man, network. And if I don't do the morning coffee, one week, maybe we'll do a Whiskey Wednesday night, and we'll see how well that goes. But
I like that.
But let's reach out. And again, it's not that I'm not looking to mentor anybody. I'd be glad to just listen, and not necessarily give advice, but just what I see. It doesn't mean it's the rule, but go for it. But anyway, Dave, listen, thank you so much. I don't know if there were any questions or anything that was fielded to you or anything like that, but to all the listeners, if anybody did listen, thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to come on this podcast.
Thank you, brother. And I got to tell Nikki, because he texted me, Nikki Palumbo, give you a quick shout-out. We both love you. He's texting, so I figure I'd give him a shout-out, too. I don't know if he's blowing up your phone, but he was blowing up mine.
No, I had a few other messages that came through from some folks, but
nice.
All good stuff.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it, Breezy. I love you, man, and I want to try to have you on again because we can cover some other great topics that you and I have just talked about over the years. I know it would be good to try to do this again, so thanks again, man. There's a lot of good information. I appreciate everything that you do, and appreciate everything you've done for me, man. Love you.
All love, brother.
All right, well, for everybody listening, thank you so much. We went past the hour, so if you stayed on, I appreciate it. If you're listening to this next week when it's on iTunes or iHeartRadio or fireengineering.com or whatever, again, thank you guys so much for the loyalty and the interest in listening and everything like that. So check out Paul Wind, Battalion 1 Consultants. He's on social media outlets. You guys can check him out. Check him out on the Monday mornings for the morning coffee at 9 a.m. on Instagram Live. And till then, this is Dave McGlynn with Fire Engineering Podcast Network for Success. I want everybody to stay safe. Thank you so much. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to Fire Engineering Talk Radio.